If you've ever lost your mind researching NEPA cases while recent presidential administrations changed the regulations and ruined Westlaw's citing cases research function, go ahead and subscribe, leave us a five-star review. Friends, welcome back to the Environmental Law Monitor podcast. This is Bracewell's podcast on environmental and natural resources law and policy. Today, we're going to be taking a hard look at a recent DC Circuit decision that concluded that the Council on Environmental Quality's regulations for the National Environmental Policy Act are ultra vires, or in Texan, ultra vires. That case is Marin Audubon Society versus the FAA. In the studio, to break it all down, we have me, Daniel Pope. I'm joined by my co-host, Taylor Stewart, as well as our NEPA experts, Kevin Ewing and Ann Navarro. And Taylor, I don't mean to suggest here that you or I don't have any thoughts on this one. We might not be NEPA experts yet, but I think we've definitely moved past the novice stage. Thank you all for joining us today. It's been a few weeks since the decision. I think it's taken most of that time and an extended holiday for all of us to pick our jaws up off the floor following this decision out of the DC Circuit and have a sit-down conversation on the case. So I know we are all really eager to jump into the part of the conversation where we talk about what this decision means for the CEQ, what it means for other federal agencies, and especially, you know, for our friends at companies with projects, like what does it mean for them? Let's start at the top with what the case was about and how the DC Circuit reached this sort of bombshell decision that it did about CEQ authority. Taylor, why don't you leave off?
Sure. Thanks, Daniel. So I think it's worth spending a moment talking about what happened and what the facts of the case were. I think for all intents and purposes, this case sort of started out as a run-of-the-mill NEPA matter. And really, it involved the National Park Service and the Federal Aviation Administration, or the FAA. And the FAA prepared for a few national parks in California an air tour management plan for like tourist flights over the national parks. And when they did that, they determined that an EA and an EIS wasn't needed under NEPA, so they didn't do a NEPA analysis. And environmental groups filed a challenge arguing that the NEPA analysis was actually needed and it should have been prepared. And then they worked their way up to the DC Circuit. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of national attention to this case because really it involved a sort of normal NEPA question that the DC Circuit sees all the time. And it appears that in oral argument, a question about whether CEQ, the Council for Environmental Quality, even has authority under NEPA to issue binding regulations came up in the argument. But this issue had not been briefed or addressed at all by the parties. So after oral argument, the court, you know, of course, issues this opinion a few weeks ago where it spends most of the opinion talking about whether CEQ has authority under NEPA to issue binding regulations, eventually concluding after, you know, sort of looking for this authority that the only authority it could really find was a Carter administration executive order. And then the court eventually determines that CEQ does not have authority under NEPA to issue binding regulations. And then at the end, they sort of get back to the question on the merits that we would have expected them to address in the first place. So really, I think we were all a little surprised to see this decision as the one that the DC Circuit decided to take up the issue of CEQ's authority. I certainly think the parties didn't expect to see this coming, and they, of course, didn't brief these issues. And I don't think that they expected themselves to be sort of wrapped up in this landmark DC Circuit opinion that will certainly generate a significant amount of controversy going forward. And can you tell us what the court actually ended up deciding and maybe why you think that the court reached this issue in this particular case now?
Sure. Happy to do that, Taylor. And it certainly was a bombshell decision. I will share that Kevin Ewing and I were in a vehicle along with a few of our other colleagues from Bracewell when I received word of the decision via text message on my phone. And there was quite a lot of lively discussion in the vehicle during the remainder of our trip because it was certainly quite a surprise and a bombshell ruling. I will say that the notion that CEQ does not have authority to issue binding rules, whether you agree or not, is not completely out of left field. As you say, there's certainly been discussion of it for years. The DC Circuit drops not a footnote, but actually in the text, cites a number of its own decisions that they themselves have dropped footnotes questioning the authority. So it's a bombshell that it has happened the way it did, but I would maybe analogize it to a volcano that smoldered for years and then suddenly erupted unexpectedly. In terms of what the DC Circuit ruled, they basically held that Congress did not give CEQ authority in NEPA itself to issue rules that essentially regulate federal agencies, that are binding upon federal agencies, and that the foundation for the CEQ rules was the Carter-era executive order that directed CEQ to issue regulations. And the purpose of that was to create a binding way to get the agencies on the same page in terms of NEPA implementation so that agencies were not doing things in disparate ways that made things kind of chaos and confusing. As for why now, and then I will ask Kevin for his additional thoughts, I think it's fair to say that Judge Randolph has been concerned about this issue for a good many years. And it was raised at argument in the case, which I expect came somewhat out of the blue. And there was no supplemental briefing because I expect the parties did not perceive it as a meaningful issue in the case. But I think Judge Randolph had been thinking about it for a long time. And he and one of his colleagues used this occasion as an occasion to finally articulate the view that CEQ does not have statutory authority to issue binding rules.
The question about why now is such an interesting one, and perhaps it is fitting to simply say it seems part of the zeitgeist right now, doesn't it? We're at a point in a number of areas of policy and social political change where long-held understandings and principles seem to be ripe for being reconsidered or even overturned, and maybe a bit of that zeitgeist blew into the room as Judge Randolph spoke with Judge Henderson and animated them to say, this is the case. Interestingly, Chief Judge Srinivasan, was the third panelist and issued a mild but clear dissent. Mild in the sense that the tone was very respectful and thoughtful, as it should be. But also the message was clear that this was not the case to reach an issue that was not necessary to be reached to resolve the claims made, nor appropriate to deal with such a fraught issue, given its many implications, which we should unpack here, without briefing and without due consideration in a wider context than a small colloquy during oral argument. So it is not surprising then to me that it happens now, although I did not guess it at the time. It does seem to fit the times generally.
So how do we get from this question percolating in the DC circuit and apparently very, very niche DC cocktail parties where there are not more interesting subjects to discuss? How do we get from there to actually, like, how did the DC circuit get there though, right? Like, what was their basis for concluding that CEQ lacked the authority? Sure, we trace it back to the EO. What's wrong with the EO, or what's wrong with CEQ relying on the Carter executive order to implement these regulations and sort of standardize the approach? What was the flaw? And how did, you know, while we're at it, this wasn't an issue that was briefed by the parties. It came up at oral argument. Neither party really dedicated briefing space to think, you know, to saying this is essential to resolve my claim. So why did they jump over that barrier?
I think the short answer is that in Judge Randolph's eyes, and joined by Judge Henderson, it is always pertinent for court to consider the fundamental issues of authority rather than simply proceeding to testing whether or not an agency had conducted itself appropriately against a given standard. It is pertinent to ask, does that standard have legal validity? So they felt, I think, it is an evergreen, always relevant issue.
Sort of like subject matter jurisdiction, right? Like a court always has to make sure that it has subject matter jurisdiction over a dispute, right? Separation of powers is sort of like that, I guess.
It seemed a little bit like that. And you just mentioned the separation of powers. That seemed to be an important aspect of the majority of the panel here, to note that separation of powers issues were raised by the problem or the topic of claim, I guess, if you will, that the executive branch had overreached the legislative authority granted by Congress.
And certainly in terms of the timing and the zeitgeist, I expect Loper Bright was on their minds, giving an opportunity to issue a ruling based on the very plain language of a simple statute without the potential impediment of deference to the agency.
And in fact, I think you're dead right, Anne, and they cite Loper Bright in the relevant part of this opinion, which is part two, and they cited in setting aside the importance of Andrews versus Sierra Club, which is a very old but important Supreme Court case dating back to the late 1970s, which gives credence to and support for the idea that CEQ has this authority. And they say, well, we can set aside or not be governed by Andrews, the decision in 1979 or so, late 1970s, because Loper Bright now tells us that we should not be so deferential. And in a similar vein, they raised and set aside supportive remarks in DOT versus Public Citizen, which is a leading unanimous Supreme Court decision.
Well, on the topic of the parties not having briefed this and the court sort of picking it up on its own, where does that take us with the status of this decision? And I'll ask you, because no mandate has issued following the opinion, is that right?
That's correct. Well, there has been, the environmental plaintiffs in the case have now filed a petition for rehearing, which I think was just filed yesterday or the day before. And they're reading that as pretty interesting because they are not grappling with the underlying substance of the conclusion in their petition for rehearing. They're taking up the chief judge's dissent, which is that the court had no cause to reach the issue and that it contravenes the principle of party presentation. They're also interestingly characterizing the conclusion about the CEQ regulations as dicta, which may or may not get them very far. So that's the current status of the case. And obviously, the government is also weighing what and when to file.
For those of our listeners who don't get to enjoy day in, day out federal litigation practice, when you say no mandate has issued, what does that mean? What's the significance of that?
It means the decision hasn't taken effect yet. But I would argue that on this point, the decision has taken extraordinary effect. So it's true the mandate has not issued, but it is also true that the decision has created a lot of chaos and uncertainty. And it's had implications for other cases. For example, as folks probably know, there is a pending challenge to the Biden administration's phase two NEPA regulations in North Dakota brought by a number of states. The case has been briefed and now argued, but the court is very interested in this issue that the DC Circuit has ruled on. And so DOJ is filing a supplemental brief in that case on this issue in mid-December with plaintiffs to file a reply towards the end of the month. So DOJ in that case has already filed a short substantive defense of CEQ's authority to issue these regulations. So it will be interesting to see how they expand on that in their filing in the next week or so.
I think, Anne, you may have just touched on the very first articulation of the DOJ or federal position in a court proceeding that I'm aware of. And it was done overnight because it was an order on an afternoon saying you will provide this briefing by the next morning, not even a full day. So they worked through the night to design that over at the Justice Department. They do lay down, I think, the outlines that they can expand upon in further briefing. But one key element of that outline of their view and perspective, I guess, or position is the battery of Supreme Court cases, Methow Valley, you know, Marsh versus Oregon Natural Resource Council, these are really strong, long-held, famous chestnut NEPA cases, all of which would seem to go in a different direction from the panel. So it will be interesting to see how the Justice Department's position evolves in the particular case you cite, and more generally, and how it might evolve after the inauguration. Because even if there's not a mandate that makes the technical effectiveness of the opinion manifest, we know we have many implications. And one of the implications is this open season now on NEPA policy? Is this an invitation for a future administration to say, you know what? All bets are off. We're free of the CEQ regs. We have a fresh tabula rasa, clean slate upon which to direct executive agencies to approach NEPA the way we intend them to via guidance.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I think no matter what happens, the genie's out of the bottle.
And at the same time, we have a Supreme Court that seems to have an appetite for addressing these NEPA issues with oral argument in the Seven Counties case next week. So,
yes. So the Seven Counties case, which is the first NEPA case to go before the Supreme Court since Public Citizen, you know, this issue is not briefed or raised. I believe the government had a footnote in their reply brief acknowledging the decision and, you know, explaining the government was still looking at it. So it certainly will be fascinating to see if the issue comes up at oral argument. I'm not sure the validity of the regulations is necessarily critical to resolving the Seven Counties case. It will be interesting, though, to see how the justices feel about that.
Can I take that thread and weave it a little bit further? What does it mean for agency NEPA implementing regulations if the CEQ regulations are held to be non-binding at the very least? Does that mean that the implementing regulations of the Department of the Interior or an independent agency like the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission also have no validity anymore? Or does it mean something else? And I think that we ought to kick that around a little bit. I think that's part of the implication of the decision that's been reached. Anne, do you have thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's a super interesting question. And I'm sure a lot of lawyers at CEQ, DOJ, and a lot of agencies, in fact, I know they have been sitting around trying to figure out what it means for them and their regulations and their current reviews, et cetera. I think it's kind of interesting. If you look at the DC Circuit decision, it acknowledges that there may be a question around agency rules given its conclusion. But it basically, you know, the question it posed is it permissible for another agency in its own rulemaking to adopt CEQ rules? The panel suggested that was an interesting question that they didn't have to answer. So the DC Circuit has not answered that, but it did note, you know, and I would note that agencies deal with the NEPA rules in different ways if you look at the precise language that they use in their own NEPA regulations. And it's very different because it's not all the same. And according to the DC Circuit, the Department of the Interior's rules do not adopt the CEQ rule. Instead, they say that Interior's own rules should be used for compliance with the CEQ rules. Now, maybe that's a distinction without a difference, but I think each agency is going to have to look at the way its own rules are structured to understand whether there are implications and what they are. And if I could just note one more thing, the DC Circuit pointed out that if the agencies could just adopt the CEQ rules, or if they had, it had to have been the 1978 version, because no agency, and this is true, has issued new agency rules since the NEPA rules started changing in 2020 and since. And so the DC Circuit may believe that every agency, if they're operating under the CEQ rules, can only use the original version.
I think a bit of history here will add some complexity, but perhaps some interest as well. When these agencies were for the first time grappling with the CEQ regs and deciding how to issue their own NEPA implementing regulations, they had to decide whether to incorporate the CEQ regulations by reference, to expressly adopt them, or to do something else. And the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, is a good example where the original notice of proposed rulemaking that they issued way back decades ago to implement NEPA proposed originally to incorporate by reference, essentially adopt as their own the regulations of the CEQ. And in response to that, the CEQ and others said, no, that would not be appropriate. That's not the right way to think about the CEQ regs. The CEQ regs exist on their own, and your responsibility at the agency, in this case the FERC, is merely to issue supplemental regulations while also complying with our CEQ regulations. And so in the final articulation of the FERC implementing rules, Part 380 as we now know it for FERC, they shifted the posture. They shifted from an incorporation by reference adoption of the CEQ regs into a statement of, we will choose voluntarily to act consistently with, to comply with the CEQ regs over there, even as we issue supplemental, complementary, specific regulations of our own here. So they are not standing on the validity of the CEQ regs. That's an interesting bit of history, I think, at least for those agencies who acted similarly, because even if the CEQ regs fell away in their validity, that leaves still open and unaddressed what is the validity of the unrelated supplemental regulations under NEPA issued by each agency. And the majority in Marin Audubon called it a wrinkle of a question. And I think it's one they have not come close to ironing out.
Yeah, it seems like it might be a little bit more of a small mountain range. I was wondering, as I thought about this kind of question, whether an agency's compliance with NEPA is a little bit like an agency's compliance with FOIA, right? You have a statute that directs agencies to do things with public information in a similar way that you have NEPA instructing agencies to take a look at the environmental impacts of their actions. One difference, I think, is that FOIA also directs each agency to establish rules of process to govern how it will make information public, how it will protect confidential business information and all of those other things. FOIA specifically directs each agency to take action and publish in the Federal Register its proposed and final regulations for how it will handle that process. And, you know, I've spent most of the time I've spent in NEPA statutory text is around effects, around sort of the usual provisions, but I do not recall a similar instruction in the text of NEPA directing each agency to establish their own regulations.
Well, they don't use the word regulation, but NEPA does direct the agencies to identify and develop methods and procedures in consultation with CEQ to ensure that presently unquantified environmental amenities and values, presently meaning 1969.
Oh, well, there we go. We can scratch my FOIA comment then.
it's an interesting comment because, you know, that is the provision of NEPA that directs somebody to do something to implement the statute. And it is not CEQ. It's all agencies of the federal government. So it doesn't say regulations. I haven't thought about whether methods and procedures sweeps in binding regulations, even though they would be binding on the agency itself since it applies to the federal government.
You know, Anne, I think you're very right to point to those provisions, I think in Section 102, if I recall correctly, of NEPA. And I think that also can help explain why the court in Marin County, or Marin Audubon, didn't just end their decision and opinion on the issue of CEQ reg validity. They dealt with that issue, but they then also proceeded in Part 3 to deal with the actual claim that was made, which was testing whether or not the FAA and the Park Service acted arbitrarily in designing the baseline. Well, they did the whole traditional NEPA analysis there, felt it was inappropriately designed baseline, and are remanding back to the agencies to fix their error, none of which would have been necessary or even correct to get to if the knocking out of the CEQ regs also knocked out any other sort of standard for judging agencies. And that gets to the broader implication then. What does it mean to lose the CEQ reg? It does not mean some things. We ought to maybe start there. What does it not mean? It does not mean that NEPA does not impose requirements directly by statutory language on agencies.
And they're a lot more detailed now than they used to be with the amendments from a year plus ago and the Fiscal Responsibility Act.
Yeah, and the court didn't really address those, right? The court really sort of ignored the fact that the statute has been recently amended.
Right.
I think that's right, and you're correct. It is quite a lot of statutory language. We need to be reminded that key concepts that are part and parcel that CEQ regulations derive directly from the statute. Things like having to assess the environmental impacts of the proposed action, having to assess alternatives, what the impacts of alternatives to the proposed action would be, the unavoidable adverse environmental impacts, that concept of avoidance has to be considered, the relationship between short-term uses of resources and longer-term needs for those resources, the irretrievable commitment of resources. These concepts are all directly in the statute. And even without any implementing regulations by an agency or by CEQ, they would have to be given full effect by every agency on any major decision that they make. So we know that Moin on whatever it does, if it becomes effective as written, it does not knock out the requirement of agencies to conduct NEPA analysis. And doesn't that end then get to an interesting question? What on earth should applicants who are in the process right now be doing? Should they set aside any NEPA, figuring that it won't be required at the end of the day as they are prosecuting their applications for permits? Should they go about the supporting the NEPA analysis of the agency the way they have for Lobby's many years? Or should they be doing something else? What do you think, Anne?
Well, I mean, NEPA is going to continue unless Congress decides to alter it dramatically. And so, as you say, the agencies are going to have to continue conducting a NEPA review when they are taking a proposed federal action. I think there's a very good possibility that after January 20th, the structure of how it's done in terms of the regulatory framework may look different. But the basic components of the NEPA analysis, as recently made more specific by Congress, will continue to be required. And so if I'm an applicant, I'm continuing business as usual in terms of the types of issues that I'm analyzing in support of an application to support the agency's review until told differently by the agency. Because there's no doubt, you know, and a lot of the issues that we have to look at in the course of doing that, like impacts on species, impacts on cultural resources, I mean, all those things have separate statutory sources. And so all of that is going to continue. So even though this is kind of an unexpected eruption, and I think things will look different in the next couple years, I'm not sure the underlying substantive analysis is going to change very much. What do you think, Kevin?
I agree very much with the advice right now, as a general matter, to proceed to support agencies in traditional NEPA analysis rather than betting on what the outcome of this current decision and its aftermath might be. And for a couple of reasons, you've articulated some. I'll just also say from a litigation threat standpoint, even if you end up being reasonably right that the CEQ regs are completely out and for some reason those also knock out any agency responsibilities under their own regulations, so you didn't have to do a very robust NEPA analysis, it's going to be tested very fiercely in court over your project's permit. Not sure that that is going to be the best way to de-risk a project. I think doing additional, maybe more NEPA work than might in the end have been required in retrospect, but that meets current expectations, is a pretty sound way to maintain project stability and to maintain the risk basis upon which that project has been designed. So I agree with you, Anne, very much there.
One thing I've wondered about following this decision, the NEPA regulations as published by CEQ can be really handy to a project at the conclusion of their NEPA analysis because they can point to the chapter and verse and go to court and say, we have fulfilled, in partnership with the agency, what is required by the National Environmental Policy Act. And the agency's right here with us. We're standing shoulder to shoulder and defending permits, authorizations, records of decision. so on and so forth. And to your point, Kevin, it seems like, you know, if the CEQ regulations were to go away, we would be in a period where there would just be a considerable amount of uncertainty with new claims, maybe some unanticipated novel claims made about what the statutory text of NEPA requires and how a particular project has failed to meet the burdens of the statute. That's one thing I'm kind of curious to see, if plaintiffs and project opponents will start advancing novel claims that previously would have been sort of cabined by the regulatory text. That's one thing I'm looking out for in 2025 and 2026, even as we pay attention to what the incoming administration is going to do with NEPA, with CEQ following this decision.
You know, let me take that up and also get Ann's thought on that here for a second. You know, I think the initial thought of those who use NEPA as a regulatory cudgel in litigation to defeat projects is that the loss of the CEQ regs is detrimental to their case because the standards and requirements are less well articulated. By the same token, projects also benefit, permittees benefit from being able to point to the specificity of the regs in order to justify the action. That was your point. But I wonder if there's a third perspective here, which is, you know, one of the things that the CEQ regs did way back in the 70s was take a very broadly worded, in fact, broadly conceived statute and put it into fairly practical terms. If you lose the practicality that is embedded in the CEQ regs and similar regulations and agencies, and you fall back on very broad language about the human condition, the human environment, and long-term uses of resources and nature and the improvement of the natural condition, and it goes on from there. It's kind of the Star Wars metaphysical universe here.
The opening title crawl in yellow text on a starry field.
It's a beautifully written statute, yeah.
I think there are websites where you can sort of make your own Star Wars intro, and I'm just going to copy paste NEPA statutory text into that.
So I think that's a great point, Kevin, that if all we have is the statute to guide, then there may be an opportunity to convince courts to broaden what might have otherwise been required under the CEQ regulations. I think folks are going to be very attentive to that risk. And I mean, one option we could see, and there are so many different ways I think this could play out, but CEQ could issue guidance to the agencies, which the agencies can be directed to follow by the president, or which the agencies could then use to do their own procedures and methods as contemplated by the statute, whether they, you know, go through notice and comment rulemaking, which I expect they would, but that would be interesting to think about whether they have to, and try to keep the analysis logical and cabined in that fashion. So I tend to not think there's going to be just a world where we can just start to make stuff up under NEPA. I think there's not a great risk of that, especially given the decades of case law on the statute.
I think there's another reason why as well, and that is we happen to be anticipating a regime change in January of next year that it seems unlikely to allow a vacuum to exist in federal executive branch policy on NEPA. It seems to me the more likely possibility is that the new administration might be persuaded to read the ruling very broadly as destabilizing all of the existing regulatory NEPA regulatory structure of the agencies and putting therefore greater weight on new NEPA guidance that could be issued, not as binding, but as the default basis for agency action going forward. So we'll have, I think, to watch how this plays out. As you said, Anna, it could play out in lots of different ways. But I think there is still an irreducible piece here, which is NEPA continues to exist and to apply. And so finding ways for projects to anticipate how to create a robust record that can work against any future NEPA standard that is reasonably anticipated. That's the job right now.
And just one final question for both of you. And you mentioned this earlier. There have been quite a few arguments I've seen, particularly by the petitioners in the Marin Audubon case, to say that the portion of the court's decision that found that CEQ doesn't have authority to issue binding regulations is actually dicta and is not part of the ruling at all. What is your thought on that argument? I will start with Anne.
Well, I mean, we could have kind of a yes and no type argument. I think it's probably not fair to characterize it as dicta, but I think it's a legitimate argument to make. I mean, the question is, was it essential to the court's ultimate decision? And if it wasn't, then it's dicta. And if it was, then it's not. I don't see the petition for rehearing getting much traction on that point. What do you think, Kevin?
I think the reality is that part two of the opinion, which is the one that took out the CEQ regs in one fell swoop, is not only separated as a separate part, but functionally demonstrates that no part of that decision relating to CEQ authority was part of or necessary for the arbitrary and capricious finding of the court in part three, which is the guts of the case and is the basis for the remand. The remand is not because of the CEQ regs. The remand is because of the arbitrary and capricious determination of the baseline. So what I would say, I think in agreement with you, Anne, maybe, is it doesn't seem very politic to tell this panel that was just dicta, because I don't know you're going to get very far with Judge Randall that, and probably not with Judge Anderson, considering they have decided this is the moment, this is the time, this is the hill on which we die on this issue or proceed on this issue. But as a textual matter, it by the own structure of the opinion, we see that that finding about CEQ's authority was simply not necessary for the action of the court, which was taken under part three.
It might be easier to tell another court that that passage was dicta than the panel.
Which they may try, or en banc. they will make that argument.
Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see what DOJ says about it in their filing in North Dakota. I mean, my first gut reaction was that it could be characterized as dicta, but I don't know that that will carry the day or that it really matters. I mean, honestly, at this point, the horse has left the barn, and it's a live issue now whether it was dicta or not.
Dicta that can't be undicted or unsaid.
And I think you had the right analogy both times. Your metaphors were perfect today. An eruption of a volcano, long smoldering, but we're surprised at the time. But also genie's out of the bottle. I think that works. You know, a horse can sometimes make it back to the barn. Genie's too big to fit back into that little magic lantern. So I don't think you can stop her back in. I think we're going to be living in a post-Marin NEPA world for many years to come.
Well, speaking of volcanoes and wrapping us up, and your references to volcanoes here have made me think once again about our wonderful national park, Yellowstone, a caldera, and how typically erupts every 260 to 280,000 years. And it's been 260,000 years since it last erupted. So I will now go to bed worrying about the possibility of that, thinking about the potential environmental effects and the significant impacts of such an eruption, even as we try to gauge the effects of this particular eruption. So thank you all for circling up and getting to talk about this fascinating decision. I think there will be much more to say in the wake of it as we see a new administration roll in, and as of course we look for DOJ briefing over the next 2 months under this administration. Thank you all. Thank you most of all to our audience for sticking with us and tuning in. Hope this was interesting for you, and we'll talk to you soon.